Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karab, guten tag, ciao, wivi, va, cat, bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how? Go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical, vivisection, prison, killitary, industrial, core, poor nation. In the cheese-covered post-constitutional, bankster bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NRA, NSA, USA, home of Uncle Sam, Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, the broadcast that inexplicably has been mocking the human species for 13 years now, you know, getting to the mock meat of the matter that while we think that we are the supreme species, we are human supremacists, we are number one. I don't know, despite the thumb, vocal cords, and the tools, I'm sure the other species just look at us and think, a bunch of self-destructive buffoons who wage war, make nukes. Yeah, that's how they boil water. They make nukes. Fukushima, just to boil water. And those Homo sapiens eat meat, dairy, fish, and eggs, of course, which is the most destructive of the behaviors. Well, through disease alone, killing more Americans than all wars combined. And from an environmental perspective, if you look at the study from the World Watch Institute, that animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions, that would mean that all other human activity combined is not as destructive to the environment as your consumption of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. So what could the solution be? We want to save the planet. We don't want the children to live in a climate-changed world. What could the solution be? Let's see. If we were logical, you know, on the university campus, smart people, we would say, what? Go vegan? That would be a wonderful solution, it seems. And you can go to chompingclimatechange.org to see what the effect of that would be if 25% of the current consumers of animal products would shift to going vegan. Well, that basically saves the world, right? But that's not what we see in the mainstream media, like the Los Angeles Times today in the Nation section, where the headline is, "Scientists Race to Develop Farm Animals to Survive Climate Change." Brilliant, isn't that? Okay, not go vegan. Let's develop new animals. Let's look at the article here. It says, and it's written by Evan Halper, and when a team of researchers from the University of Delaware traveled to Africa 2 years ago to search for exemplary chickens, they weren't looking for plump thighs or delicious eggs. Delicious eggs, I can kind of gag a little bit. They were seeking out birds that could survive a hotter planet. The researchers were in the vanguard of food scientists backed by millions of dollars from the federal government. Now, I mean, the federal government can't put up billboards to say go vegan to save the environment. No, it's putting up millions of dollars racing to develop new breeds of farm animals, so-called farm animals, that can stand up to the hazards of global warming. Some climate change activists dismiss the work, it says here, I'm quoting from the article, which is just getting underway as a distraction and a concession to the industrial style agriculture, which they blame for compounding the world's environmental problems. And, of course, there's nothing more destructive to the environment. You can't do more than 51%, right? I mean, well, 52%. Oh, and the climate scientists from the World Watch Institute say at least 51%. Could be more. Okay, where was I? Those leading the experiments, however, say new heat-resistant breeds of farm animals will be essential to feeding the world as climate change takes hold. Think, people, think. Okay, the experiments reflect a continued shift in the federal government's response to climate change. And you knew it wouldn't be the right response, right? Okay. With efforts to reduce carbon emissions lagging behind what most scientists believe will be needed to forestall further warming, the government increasingly is looking for ways to protect key industries from the impact. Oh, so that's what it's about. Protecting industries, but not protecting the planet. When there's no planet, what industries will there be? It says, in agriculture, quote, we are dealing with the challenge of difficult weather conditions at the same time we have to massively increase food production, end quote, to accommodate larger populations and growing demand for meat, said Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack. That means efforts like the one here, in which Carl Schmidt and his colleagues are trying to map the genetic code of bizarre-looking African... Well, bizarre-looking to whom? I suppose the humans coming in look pretty bizarre to the birds there. So it says, what did I say? Carl Schmidt and his colleagues are trying to map the genetic code of bizarre-looking African naked-necked chickens to see if their ability to withstand heat can be bred into flocks of U.S. Broilers. The game is changing since the climate is changing, Schmidt said. We have to start now to anticipate what changes we have to make in order to feed 9 billion people, citing global population estimates for 2050. And you know, that's supposed to mean a 70% increase in demand for meat. What planet can provide that? Where? I haven't read Go Vegan yet in this article. Okay. It says here, warmer temperatures can create huge problems for animals farmed for food. Turkeys are vulnerable to a condition that makes their breast meat mushy and unappetizing. Disease rips through chicken coops. Brutal weather can claim entire cattle herds. It's a big problem when it happens, said Gail Strasberg, a professor of food science and human nutrition at Michigan State University's, whose quest is to develop more robust turkeys, don't have that mushy breast from the climate change. Within a day or two after the heat wave hits, you'll go from there being no problem at all on a farm to 40% of turkeys' breasts having a problem. Whew, insane, huh? Maybe it's that I'm vegan 30 years. I can't believe people still eat. Such repulsive items as living beings. If we start seeing a lot more shifts in summer temperature extremes, there's going to be more of this. He said Strasberg's research involves turning up the heat lamps several degrees on... So this is science right here. The research involves turning up the heat lamp several degrees on hundreds of turkey chicks as well as on turkey eggs before they hatch. Researchers will then study the animal's muscles and attempt to parse out genes that could help the animals endure hotter environments. The hope is ultimately to probably get a stamp of approval from HSUS. No, it says the hope is ultimately to enable the industry to breed turkeys resilient to heat waves. Let me see here. Something I wanted to get to, and am I going to have time to do it? Let me see here. Let's see. So some climate experts, however, question the federal government's emphasis on keeping pace with a projected growing global appetite for meat. Because raising animals demands so many resources, the only viable way to hit global targets for greenhouse gas reduction may be to encourage people to eat less meat, they say. Well, if eating less meat is better, wouldn't eating no meat, dairy, fish, or eggs be best? The U.S. Department of Agriculture approach to climate change is like trying to promote driver safety while helping the car industry make faster faster cars, said Alan Miller, who recently retired as a principal climate change specialist at the World Bank. I think that he may be taking over speaking duties for the late Robert Goodland, who co-authored that that study with Jeffrey Anhang. The meat industry should be more radical in confronting climate change, Miller said, pointing to an approach backed by Microsoft founder Bill Gates that takes animals out of the process altogether. The billionaire is bullish on technology that would use pea proteins, that's PEA, don't get grossed out, PEA, pea proteins to create replicas of beef and chicken that are indistinguishable from the real thing. There's no way to produce enough meat for 9 billion people, Gates wrote recently on his blog, yet we can't ask everyone to become vegetarians. Well, I wouldn't. I ask everyone to become vegan. Please, would you become vegan? Please become vegan to save the planet for everyone, for the children, for the animals, for yourself. We need more options. I'm getting back to Gates here. We need more options for producing meat without depleting our resources. That's what Bill Gates is saying. Let's see. At Oklahoma State University, scientist Megan Rolfe says her efforts could result in herds of cattle that consume less water and feed. The idea is to create animals that are more efficient, Rolfe said. Doesn't that sound like a human supremacist? We want to create animals who are more efficient. To that effect, the university just ordered at auction its first herd for her study, some 140 animals. Her team will keep close track on how they eat and behave, as well as what is in their DNA. Finicky consumers complicate the work for researchers. Continuing the article here, it says, the Brahman breed of cattle, for example, a rugged specimen with roots in India, is undeterred by hot, harsh conditions. One place it doesn't do well, though, is in America, taste tests. Rolf's goal is to create a steer as resilient as Brahmins, but ones that taste good. But instead, why not go vegan? Coming up on today's program, Sherry Kolb, Cornell University law professor, who's the author of a wonderful book, Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger? And Other Questions People Ask Vegans, and Sandra Higgins of Eden Sanctuary, and Gary Francio. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. And you can support the program with a donation. You can also donate at worldvegansummit.com/donate. We'll be talking more about that event later in the program. Right now, I want to welcome Sherry Kolb, professor of law and Charles Evans Hughes scholar at Cornell University Law School, where she teaches courses in animal rights. And She is a graduate of Columbia College and Harvard Law School, and a former law clerk to the late Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun. So, and her book is from a legal scholar, you would expect the book to be Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger? And Other Questions People Ask Vegans. And it is a wonderful, thoughtful book. And thank you for being with us today. Professor Kolb, how are you?
I'm good, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Well, terrific. So I start enjoying your book right from the introduction, right from where you start, and it just keeps on going, and it's such an interesting read as you approach so much of the life of experience of most vegans. I can see myself in so many of these situations, but right from the introduction, you say, a peaceful revolution has begun, and it starts with what we eat. This revolution calls on every one of us to stop and think about what we know in our hearts. There is a wide chasm between what we believe animals deserve and how we conduct our lives. The men and women actively calling for enlightened change for animals, a change born of passion and compassion, are vegan. So I take it you're pro-vegan.
Yeah. I guess I wasn't that subtle about that.
Well, that's wonderful. And, well, let's start with where we go from the title, Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger? What's behind that? I remember I had a job interview in Washington, D.C. I had to fly in and meet a conservative Southern general manager at a radio station, and he said, we're going to Blackie's House of Beef for dinner. So I this conjures up that image, but you think about what's behind it also. So tell us, you know, why you start there.
Okay, well, thank you. The name of the book, Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger, is one of many questions that people like to ask vegans. And this question in particular, I think, happens to most of us vegans when we go out to dinner at a place that does serve things that are not vegan. And somebody will say, oh, you know, you don't mind if I get this, right? And it's really a tough question, I think, for a lot of people, particularly in a situation you described. If you're in a job interview, you want to impress the person, you don't want to lose the job. And the question seems really simple, because some of the, you know, you don't mind, and you're supposed to say, oh, of course not, why would I mind? This is just what I eat. But actually, I talk about in the chapter how this is really not, for ethical vegans, just a personal decision where, you know, yeah, I don't care what you eat, this is just what I eat. It's that, you know, that would be true if I were gluten-free, and someone said, you don't mind if I have, you know, bread, and I would say, no, that's fine, you're not allergic to bread. So... But, you know, with veganism, it really is a moral decision, and it's an ethically driven decision, and so we don't really feel the same way about other people getting the thing as we would if it were just a purely personal decision, like, I'm getting vanilla, do you mind, even though you're getting chocolate, you know, and how could you possibly object? So I think there's this gap between what the person who asks the question expects and what we actually feel in our heart and want to say, and trying to bridge that, it can be complicated in different circumstances.
Of course, I want to scream out, "Of course, I mind," and then and then talk for 13 years. So,
exactly.
And how have you reacted? How have you had some of these situations come up where you've personally had to?
Yes, I have, and it's sort of it varies. Usually, one of the answers I might give is, do you really want to know the answer? And
oh, that's
then
good.
They usually pick up on the fact that the answer might not be to their liking, and then they either say no, and then they just order what they were going to order, or they just say, oh, well, that means you do mind, so I'll get
Sherry, it. Sherry, we have to take a break. We'll continue with Sherry Cold coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. We're live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also click Listen Live at goveganradio.com, where the program is archived. And today we are talking to Professor of Law, Sherry Kolb. at Cornell University Law School. And her excellent book is Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger? And Other Questions People Ask Vegans. And coming up next hour, of course, is Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione. And I open up the book and I see Gary Francione speaks glowingly of this book. He says, a powerful, compelling, and thoroughly engaging defense of veganism from an absolutely terrific legal scholar. And Gary doesn't like anybody, and he likes Sherry Kolb. So this is terrific. Now, that's an endorsement right there.
That's really funny.
I pray every week, is Gary going to show up on the show? Did I do something this week that, oh no, I'm in trouble, you know? So, but he loves the book, and I love the book too, because you really think it through so well, and I think you recognize that the people who are still pre-vegan or non-vegan are victims and also curious, where I may react in a way if somebody says to me, oh yeah, plants have feelings too, you know, and I go, oh yeah, you know, you're a plants rights activist, where's your picket sign, and why aren't you over at the produce section at Safeway, you know, if you don't know the difference between, you know, chopping a head of cabbage and chopping a head of cow, like, run for your life. But you actually, I mean, you think it through and really, you know, you connect it to sentience and questions about that. Right? I mean, so
yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Yeah. Well, my thinking is that people generally, there's some part of them that is truly interested and curious, so they wouldn't ask a question. So I look at the question as an opportunity to talk about the things that matter most to me, which is always an exciting opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, tell us then the Cliff Notes answer regarding plants and sentience. Yes.
Well, yes. So the difference between plants and animals is sentience. And people do sometimes wonder whether, you know, plants have feelings. I think that part of that turns on people's assuming that if there's a complicated chemical system for protecting an organism, that means that the organism is sentient. But and there was an article in the New York Times a few years ago that said something like, the title was, Sorry, Vegans, Brussels Sprouts want to Live Too. And the article was all about how plants have this chemical response when there's a predator or a threat. And the truth is that humans have that as well, and it has nothing to do with our sentience. If you breathe in a germ and you have a well-functioning immune system, then you will have a cascade of responses, complicated chemical responses to that, to defeat that pathogen so it doesn't multiply in your body, and you won't have any awareness of it because that's not part of our, it's not in our nervous system. So, you know, we have a lot of functions that go on without any awareness or feeling on our part. And so plants can have all that going out without having any, you know, physical sensations or sense of consciousness. And so there's, you know, there's a real difference between being alive and being sentient. And it's the latter that really gives rise to interests that we then protect with rights.
Mm-hmm. And you go off into so many interesting areas of what, I mean, I'm vegan for 30 years now, so it's hard for me to think like a non-vegan, but mm-hmm. but you do in this book here, Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger. And you talk about deprivation, which is interesting, you know, and, you know, I may not have considered that much, that people feel that suddenly they'll have to, you know, give up fun and joy and satisfaction and just be deprived, you know? I mean, so you're addressing that in the book.
Yeah, well, because I became vegan more recently than you, I still remember my thinking that it was going to be so difficult and, oh my goodness, I was going to have to give up joy in eating. And you know, it isn't true, of course, and there's a lot of, you know, sort of people's assumptions about what gives rise to pleasure. And I think part of my job as an ethical vegan is really to expose the falsity of that, So, you know, I can get into an argument. I mean, people get into arguments like, well, even if the only way you could have pleasure is through animal products, you still should give them up. And, you know, that may be true, but there isn't any conflict. You can have lots of pleasure in eating and vegan food, and that's consistent. So you don't even need to reach the question of, well, what if you had to choose? You know, we're not on the desert island. So people can have a full, joyous, pleasurable life without ever having to slaughter an animal.
Well, we are foodies. I love to eat, too. I
mean, yes.
And we do have the best food. But you do run into people all the time, you know, who say, well, I could never give up. Fill in the blank. And usually to me, it sounds like cheese or I get bacon a lot also lately.
Yeah.
Bacon seems to be coming up and I could never give up bacon, but.
Absolutely. That you hear that a lot. I actually had a student once who's taking my animal rights seminar was saying, you know, it's really hard to give up bacon. I love bacon. And you'd think we were talking about oxygen. but ultimately this person did give up bacon and all the other animal products and became vegan. So I think people struggle in some ways to imagine how easy it would be, and that when they actually do it, it turns out it's really quite easy and really the great food, as you said, is plentiful. I don't think I ever ate as well when I wasn't vegan.
I didn't either, you know, and now there are vegan restaurants everywhere. You can have vegan meals delivered to your home, and you know, I mean, it's just amazing what's out there right now.
Absolutely.
So also, I think it's interesting that you say, because with vegans, we often think, well, it's just a moral question, right? I mean, you're eating, you're hurting someone, you're causing suffering and death. That's wrong, and it's not necessarily just a moral argument, moral versus immoral. It's people seek pleasure and avoid pain, and that's part of the equation. And we have all the pleasure in vegan food. Oh, I'm going to have to make this the Vegan World Summit. The food's going to have to, you know, it's coming up in March.
I'm sure it'll be fantastic.
The food will be fantastic, and I hope you can be there and speak along with Professor Francione.
And
So you also talk a little bit about what the non-vegan might think, because you know, you can remember that back that far, or I can't. and it's interesting that you say that, well, the person might be thinking, you know, that it's not fair to put me in this position. You know, I thought that was kind of interesting, actually.
Yes. I've had conversations like that where the person said, oh, that's so amazing what you do, you know, as though I were sitting in a tent for 30 days without food. And, you know, but they could never do that. And, you know, it's really, I'm not somebody who deprives myself at all. I've never been really good. If I decide I'm going to go on a 3-day fast, it becomes a half over 1-day fast, you know, because I really enjoy eating. But I think that as humans, I mean, we have a tendency to be really bad at imagining what's going to make our lives go well. And so people do all sorts of crazy things that they think, oh, this is going to improve my life. And then they end up being mistaken. And, you know, one of the best ways, there was a book about Stumbling on Happiness, I think it was called. And it was about how the best way to figure out whether you're going to like something is to ask the people who are already doing it whether they're happy in that situation, rather than trying to imagine yourself there. And if you talk to vegans, and ask them, are you happy? Do you feel good about the food you're eating? And, you know, they will say yes. They will say, I'm so happy. I just, you know, my only regret is that this didn't happen for me earlier in my life.
That somebody wouldn't have told me earlier, you know, and that's why I get upset when vegans are upset about telling other people about being vegan. It's like,
exactly.
Why don't deprive people of the information? This is
absolutely,
you know,
not right.
Just today at the dog park, I'm leaving with Daisy, and somebody's coming in, and my shirt says, you know, eat like you give a damn. So he said, oh, hey, cool shirt. What does that mean? You know, and I said, so in the 10 seconds, it was like, well, I don't eat dogs like yours right here. I also don't eat cows and pigs, you know, no one with a face, no one with a mother. He got so interested, he kept me there for 20 minutes, and now he wants to go vegan. You know,
that's wonderful.
It's just, and that was just, you know, he saw my shirt and started a conversation, which is because I think it's important to start the conversation.
You know? Absolutely. So. That's great advocacy. And at the dog park, of course, you have people who already have a sense of empathy for animals. Mm-hmm. So they're really open, potentially open to the idea.
Right, except they're usually feeding the dogs animals also.
It's a long road, but at least it seems like they're potentially ready to get on it, maybe.
Well, I figured I don't eat, you know, dogs or cats or pigs or cats. You know, I figured I'd relate it that way.
So
how did you become vegan?
Being Gary's we were colleagues for a number of years, and so I think he was the first vegan I ever met. And we were colleagues actually at Rutgers Newark for 13 years. And so I had, before that, you know, I had thought about, oh, maybe I should give up this kind of animal or that kind of animal. And he really helped me focus. I mean, he, you know, reading his work and talking with him and sort of seeing that it all goes together, that switching from, you know, the pig to the cow is really not a, it's not a good... it's not really evolution. It's just moving from one wrong thing to another. And at the same time, I started sort of seeing animals differently. Even my own dogs, I just started to kind of see them in a new light, that they had their own lives, even when I wasn't around. And I just had a greater sense of respect for them. And I read a book called When Elephants Weep by Jeffrey Mason, and got an appreciation for the emotional lives of animals, and it all sort of came together. And one day, I still remember, I was at a Starbucks, and I had gotten, I think, a soy latte, and I called, I emailed Gary, and I said, I would like to go vegan. Can you point me to some recipes? And, you know, of course he did.
Okay, Sherry, hold on. We have to take a break. We'll continue with Sherry Cole a few more minutes on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger is her book. We'll continue. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and we have just a few minutes left with Sherry Kolb, who is the author of an excellent book, Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger? And Other Questions People Ask Vegans. How can people get the book, Sherry?
They can get it on Amazon.com, BN.com, Barnes & Noble. They can get it at Lantern Books website as well.
Okay. And I'm always terrible with time management, and I don't know how much time we'll have left to cover a few things that I wanted to. Maybe we'll be able to carry over a few minutes into the next hour, but we have Sandra Higgins coming up from Ireland and the Eden Sanctuary and Professor Gary Francione. There are a few things in the book that of interest that I wanted to discuss. Let's see what we'll deal with here. But everything from you went to a vegan retreat and returned home, and a friend of yours likened it to an Alcoholics Anonymous retreat, and that wasn't, you didn't think it was a valid comparison. Also in the book, what we can learn from the gay rights movement, I think is very interesting, and in the world of Reverence for Life, people do raise the question about abortion, which you never really hear addressed in animal rights circles. So that would take another hour to. But all of the, you know,
it might. well, which would you like me to?
I don't know. You tell me. I'm a Libra. I can't make a decision. I put out too many choices. So you tell me.
Well, let's start with gay rights. So I think that the gay rights movement really has a lot to teach the animal rights movement about how to go about its advocacy, because the gay rights movement has progressed enormously in such a short time, and I think it's largely because of the out and proud approach, where people just are in your face and they say, you know, we are gay, we're queer, you know, get used to it. And so people are, you know, so that people who are opposed to gay rights can't pretend that, oh, this is just a small fringe group and you never see them. And the moment people meet gay people, they realize that gay people are just people like the rest of us. And so I think for vegans, this comes up as well. I'm clear in the book, I think, that I'm not suggesting that vegans are in the kind of danger coming out as vegan that gay people have been in coming out as gay, but that sometimes vegans are reluctant to share the fact that they're vegan. They're worried that people will judge them or that their family will you know, get upset. And some of the same kinds of things can happen in terms of the family being offended and how you, could you do this? What is this, what we taught you? You know, that sort of thing. And that if people are just proud and clear about the fact that they're vegan, about the reasons for it, then people respect that, and people meet a lot of vegans, and that's how people go vegan. So many of us, you know, we think it's all an intellectual project, but so many, we're people. We're herd animals, just like, you know, other herd animals, and we follow others. And, you know, until I met a vegan, it didn't occur to me to become vegan. But once I did, and then I met another, I started to see, oh, this is the way people live, and these people look healthy and happy and functional, and, you know, this is something I could consider doing. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think it's, you know, obviously it's different from the gay rights movement in the sense that gay people are not interested in making everybody become gay, while vegans are interested in, or ethical vegans.
Don't tell them we have that ulterior motive.
Right, it's a secret agenda.
It's a secret agenda we have here with a show called Go Vegan Radio.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
exactly. Say it loud. I'm vegan and I'm proud. Yeah,
so. Right, exactly. And then, you know, and that gives people a sense of, wow, this is not something that you're hiding. This is something that you're clear about, and other people can do it too. And the implications for the fact that sexual orientation is not something that is inevitably heterosexual, and that's, you know, I think there was a lot of the people who are opposed to gay rights have said, well, this is, you know, the normal thing, the inevitable thing is heterosexuality. And by being out there and showing that that's false, you know, gay people show that everyone can make a choice about their sexual orientation. And I think by analogy, by showing people that it's not inevitable that we eat animal products, that we don't need it, that we're not built so that we need to have it, that people can make a choice, and they should make the choice, the right choice.
Stay with us a few more minutes, Sherry, past the break here. And it's interesting. I thought it was a quiet personal decision I made so many years ago. And here we are on the radio talking about it. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Greetings once again. Welcome back for the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, we have expanded to 2 hours since starting our syndication through the Genesis Communications Network. We're live Sundays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and you can click Listen Live at goveganradio.com. And in just a few moments, we'll be talking to Sandra Higgins at the Eden Farm Animal Sanctuary in Ireland, where it is 2 a.m. Stay awake, Sandra. And let's see, how can I keep the rest of the audience awake? Well, here's a controversial subject to discuss with my guest, Sherry Kolb, who is the author of Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger and Other Questions People Ask Vegans. We had our discussion with her last hour, which you'll be able to hear on the archive at goveganradio.com, where you can make a donation to support the program and our future efforts to do the World Vegan Summit and Expo. So, Sherry, in maybe the 3 minutes or so that we have left, the subject of abortion comes up in the arena of reverence for life. And so how have you approached the question regarding abortion?
I think it's a really legitimate question, because there are some common features to the ideology behind protecting fetal life and protecting animal lives. And you know, part of my thinking on it is that once a fetus is sentient, it does raise moral issues to consider an abortion. And so what I talk about in the book, though, is that in order to stop someone from having abortion, you're essentially forcing that person to carry a pregnancy to term. So in ordinary cases, we have a choice of either doing violence, doing nothing, or affirmatively intervening to help. So if somebody's getting hurt, we can join in, we can stand on the sidelines, or we can step in and, you know, put ourselves out there to try to protect them from harm. And in the context of abortion, that isn't the case. In the context of abortion, if the woman who's pregnant really has to choose between either killing by terminating or doing this intensively demanding intervention to save someone by carrying the pregnancy to term, and there isn't really the option of just standing by the sidelines. And so I think that's a unique sort of situation, and that for that reason, I'm pro-choice, because I don't think that we should step in and compel somebody to do the very demanding work of essentially rescuing someone inside their body. On the other hand, I do understand why somebody would come to a different conclusion on that issue. I think in the context of animal rights, it's quite different, because being vegan is not an act of good Samaritanship. I think there's a lot of confusion out there about that, because people will say, oh, you're saving 90 whatever animals if you go vegan. And what we're really doing when we go vegan is we're sparing those animals. And I think this is part of why people think, oh, if I buy cage-free, I'm doing the animals a favor or whatever. That actually, no, you're not even doing them a favor if you stop eating them. You're just not doing them violence. You know, nobody will give you kudos for walking by someone you dislike and refraining from attacking them. And that's really what we're doing. When we go vegan, we decide we're no longer going to attack. So we're not asking people to go out there and do intensively demanding rescues, although I think it's great when people do that for animals and they, you know, take on the incredibly demanding duties of running a sanctuary. But we're not asking that of people, just asking them to refrain from actively committing violence. And that's right. Something that's really easy.
And our next guest is running a sanctuary in Ireland. But in understanding, though, the abortion issue, you say sentience again is the consideration, and at a certain point a fetus gains sentience, and that's what am I understanding?
Yes, but there's some point in pregnancy, and you know, there are disputes over when that is, but there seems to be at least some thought among both pro-life and pro-choice doctors that it's somewhere in week 24, between 24, 26, something like that. And so and I think at that point, it really does raise moral issues, but that my view is that those all issues ought to be resolved by the woman, because it's so much of a demand on her body and her, you know, and it's such an intimate demand that she carry a pregnancy to term. That's asking a lot more than just asking people to refrain from violence.
Sure. Okay. Well, I think we're just about out of time. We've been talking to Sherry Kolb, who is the author of Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger and Other Questions People Ask Vegans. Definitely check out this book. There are those other questions in there from humane meat, and it just really runs the gamut. So I really enjoyed the book. Perhaps as the Vegan World Summit and Expo comes closer, we can have you back on. I'm hoping you're going to be a speaker there. We can talk more about the contents of your wonderful book.
Thank you so much. This has been great, and I would love to speak at the Expo, assuming my schedule works.
Okay, well, we have a lot of time in advance here. It's March 20, 21, and 22 to go with Gary Francione's Rutgers Law School spring break. That was the consideration. So you're probably on spring break at Cornell at about that time, I would imagine.
I'll check. I hope so.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks for being with us today, Sharon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, thanks. Take care. So we continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And I mentioned the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And Sandra Higgins is the is from the Eden Farm Animal Sanctuary in Ireland. And how are you today, Sandra?
Good, good. It's a nice night here.
I know it's 2 a.m. Thanks for staying up so late. I don't know if you've been, you know, having more coffee, but it is 2 a.m. But just from saying hello, that authenticates that you are in Ireland. I can tell just from your hello that where are you in Ireland? Where are you?
We're County Meath, not far from Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, about an hour from Dublin.
So near Dublin. And how long have you been operating the Eden Farm Animal Sanctuary?
Since 2008.
Mm-hmm. And how did that come to be? It's often a vegan's dream. We want to give sanctuary to all the animals. You actually did it. How did it come to fruition?
It was a complete accident. We were asked to take a sheep who was one of triplets, and his mother couldn't feed him. So we took him and we bottle fed him. And after about a week, I said, you know, he needs a friend. So let's see if there's another triplet. I thought this was, I didn't know anything about animals. I was reared in a town and I thought that this was an unusual occurrence. So we found a girl and we named her Cara, which is the Irish word for friend. And that was how the sanctuary began. I wasn't vegan. I was vegetarian. And they taught me everything I knew. Everything I know about other animals, I've learned from them.
Hmm.
So not long after that, we got 12 hens from a cockerel and 11 hens, actually, from a petting farm. So that was when my eyes were first opened to the sentience and the wonderful nature of birds, the individual personalities, how they're so different. And we started then to take in hens from a huge variety of situations, from the battery cages, the enriched battery cages, free-range farms, organic farms, and a lot of backyard hens.
Mm-hmm. And the way that we met was you contacted me through the worldvegansummit.com website, and with what in mind?
I read about your World Vegan Summit, and because I can't go there myself, I wanted the ambassadors from Eden represented there. So I wanted people to meet their victims, to meet the individuals that they're exploiting, and to look at their faces and their bodies and see what they're doing to them when they perpetuate the humane myth. Because last time I checked the dictionary, humane had something to do with kindness and compassion. And I'm very interested in the science of compassion. I'm a psychologist and I spend a lot of my time studying the science of compassion. Compassion begins when we perceive suffering in another, and then we can do something to alleviate that suffering. But if we fail to see their suffering, then we can never be compassionate. And I believe that welfare measures that ask for humane animal foods are closing our eyes to the very real suffering of the individuals who are exploited. Mm. So we have the classic example of ahimsa milk that focuses on the treatment of cows, how cows are treated while they're being exploited, and has no regard for equality and the fact that the maternal bond is just as strong in other mammals as it is in us. And in order to have any kind of milk, you have to separate the cow and the calf. So I think that there's no way that the bodies of other animals can become our food without that transition costing them really great suffering, including the loss of our life.
So the humane meat epidemic, the plague has even reached Ireland apparently. And you sent me pictures of Amy and Joy.
Amy was a turkey who came from a backyard, what we call in Ireland a smallholder, and people have this idea that that's the healthiest meat and the most humane situation. And really, Amy was one of the worst cases that ever came to Eden. You've seen the photographs of her. She had untreated mycoplasma. So her sinuses were so badly swollen that they totally covered her eyes and she couldn't see. She was very badly dehydrated. She had very few feathers. She was very frightened. And actually, this small holder, it was just another animal rights activist who had a sharp eye and had seen Amy and seen what was happening and saw her getting sicker all the time. And she persuaded this man that Amy would be better going to a sanctuary. And he, by the time she went back to pick up Amy, he convinced himself that he was running a sanctuary. And he said, would you ask that girl down in Meath to tell me what medicine I can use to give Amy so that we can get her big enough for Christmas? So I asked the girl to go back and tell him that we had prepared a place here for Amy and that we had already named her and that we loved her and we wanted her, and it worked and we got her.
Yeah, Sandra, hold on. We have to take a break. We'll continue with Sandra Higgins. And the website is EdenFarmAnimalSanctuary.com. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. On Twitter, at goveganradio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. There are also two Bob Linden pages on Facebook. And we're talking today to Sandra Higgins of the Eden Farm Animal Sanctuary in near Dublin, Ireland. It's after 2 a.m. She was kind enough to stay up to talk to us live on the program today. And Sandra contacted me regarding the World Vegan Summit and Expo. She said she can't travel from Ireland to Southern California, but she wanted Amy and Joy to be representatives of Eden Farm Animal Sanctuary. Amy, we had heard before the break, a turkey, and Joy. And if you go to the website, to the gallery section at EdenFarmAnimalSanctuary.com, you will see a picture of Joy, and Joy, the before and after, as she came from an enriched cage to the sanctuary, and what a difference, and how horrific her life must have been in the enriched cage, because she looks horrible. Yeah, so talk to us about, you know, enriched cages were embraced by so many of the so-called animal rights groups in the U.S., and the campaign was for them, from HSUS and Farm Sanctuary, yeah. Mercy for Animals, and Compassion Over Killing, and a number of groups just supported these enriched cages. But, I mean, look at Joy. There's no Joy.
There was certainly no Joy when she came, and there's no Joy for us now that she's gone. You see, I just think all the time that as activists, we have so much to do, and we're very short of resources. We're short of money, short of time. Some of us don't have enough years left in our lives to do all we need to do for other animals before we die. And, you know, at some point we'll run out of energy. So I ask myself all the time how I can make the best use of the resources I have to do something of significance for them. And, you know, I followed the argument on the internet that was going on in the States about enriched cages versus battery cages. And I used to go out and look at the chickens on the sanctuary and say, yeah, am I compromising you by fighting for veganism and for animal rights? And I was aware of the opinion of other activists, including some of my activist friends and colleagues, who believed that it's possible to have more humane farming and that welfare efforts are worthwhile. So I felt that I owed it to other animals and to myself and to the people who donate to me to study this very carefully and really evaluate whether or not I should be fighting for slightly less suffering that might be a little bit more easy to achieve in my lifetime, or whether I should continue my fight for their rights and for veganism. And I wrote the findings of my research in a report called Enriched Cages, Embodied Prisons. So I was very suspicious as well about humane animal foods and about welfare reform, because welfare, the meat, dairy and egg industries work with welfare. They don't work with animal rights organisations. I don't get any of them approaching me asking for my face on their products. Mm-hmm. So why are they partnering with animal welfare organisations and the humane movement?
It's a good question.
And I think that they're partnering with them because it profits them. And the results of my findings in Ireland were that the introduction of enriched cages, enriched battery cages, and the ban on barren battery cages was the saddest thing that happened, because there several reports were done in the UK and in Europe that evaluated people's attitude towards farmed animals and what they called food. And in every single report, the welfare of caged hens emerged top of people's concern. And after the ban, there was an increase in egg consumption, and that increase is attributable to two things, to free-range eggs and to the large value pack eggs, and the large value pack eggs come from the caged hens. So I get people asking me all the time, is there less suffering in enriched cages or in free-range systems or organic systems or backyard systems? So if you look at the increase in egg consumption and you think that for every female hen who's born, she had a brother.
Right, a brother who was killed at birth.
We
need to take a break, Sandra, and maybe we'll be able to spend 3 or 4 minutes talking after the break. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linton. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and also 2 Bob Linden pages on Facebook. In just a couple of minutes, we'll be talking to Professor Gary Francione. I want to finish up with Sandra Higgins, who is kind enough to be up at after 2:30 in the morning in Ireland near Dublin at her Eden Farm Animal Sanctuary. She contacted me regarding the upcoming World Vegan Summit and Expo, and although she can't make it from Ireland, she wants there to be a representation. It would be Amy and Joy, victims of the Happy Meat Syndrome, which apparently has reared its ugly head in Ireland too. So there you are at Eden Farm Animal Sanctuary, taking care of the victims of humane meat. And Sandra, we have maybe another minute or two, so I didn't want to cut you off at the end there in what you were saying about your report related to humane meat.
Actually, that report is on humane eggs, and I think that it's a report worth reading, because when we talk about humane, we talk about the treatment of other animals, so how they're treated and where they live. When we talk about the use of other animals, we talk about the breeding of other animals for our use in the first place, and it's the breeding that causes the most suffering, and that's what I've learned at Eden, because hens coming from so-called humane backyard, free-range organic situations are suffering as much here at Eden as the caged hens by virtue of the fact that they're bred for our use in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how can people see that report on the enriched eggs?
That's on my website.
And that's Eden
Farm? And it's also on Karen Davis' website, on United Poultry Concerns' website.
Okay, so yours is at EdenFarmAnimalSanctuary.com. And people can look at the photo gallery, and you'll look at Joy before and after when she arrived, and you took really good care of her in her last days, it seemed. So you did give her some comfort in a very uncomfortable, torturous life. So
that report is also useful because it shows the evidence that I've gathered at Eden of the fractures and the cancerous tumors. So you can see the horrific suffering of the hens, but you'll also see the intersectionality, that this is a human rights issue, because I rescued those hens as they were going into the food chain, the companion animal and the processed food chain, and they had cancerous bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who think that it's okay to eat them, I think this is really important. This is a human rights issue that they need to know too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a human rights issue that you know, I mean, people shouldn't be eating so-called meat, dairy, fish, and eggs right from the start. I mean, they're, you know, related to all sorts of social justice issues. And, so, okay, well, we'll miss you at the conference, but we'll appreciate the presence of Amy and Joy.
Yeah.
And thank you. Thank you for the work you're doing at Eden Farm Animal Sanctuary, the website EdenFarmAnimalSanctuary.com. Thank you, Sandra Higgins.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay. And now we introduce Professor Gary Francione of Rutgers University, the abolitionistapproach.com. And we had your good friend on the show earlier. I don't know if you were listening, Gary. Sherry Kolb was on in the first hour.
Oh, Sherry. Yes. You know, Sherry and I were colleagues at Rutgers Law School. She's now at Cornell.
That's what she said. Yeah.
It was just she and her partner, Michael Dorf, two wonderful people, really, just came back to Rutgers for a conference that we had a couple of weeks ago in which we talked about abolition, regulation, and citizenship. And we had Professor Will Keimlicka and Sue Donaldson there, who had written Zoopolis. And we had a very interesting one-day conference. We had a very, very good turnout, and it was terrific to see Sherry again. And she's really become a very articulate spokesperson for veganism. She's really doing a great job, and she's also very funny. I didn't hear the interview, but I'm sure that she brought her characteristic sense of humor with her. And
well, just the title of her book, you know, Mind If I Order the Cheeseburger? You know?
Yes, exactly.
I mean,
exactly. I don't know exactly how to describe this, if this is good news or I don't know. Well, actually, I don't know what it is, but earlier this week, I saw on the Vegan Society website, and I used the that's the name that they gave their organization. I don't regard it as the Vegan Society, but they regard it as the Vegan Society, the one that Donald Watson started in 1944. Poor Donald.
That should be a vegan society, then, if Donald Watson.
Indeed, actually, Donald Watson was an incredibly progressive, very visionary man in many ways, and he must be rolling over in his grave at high speed, because this past week I saw a campaign they have called Love Vegan, and so I clicked on to see what they were saying, and I'm reading what they had. You don't have to be vegan to love vegan things. There, we said it. You don't have to be vegan. You can still love vegan food, vegan shoes, vegan soap, and pretty much everything. A few changes, small changes, would see you living your life closer to the values you already hold, caring about animals, for example. It's a start. And I was just flabbergasted to see that the Vegan Society was saying that you don't have to be vegan. Now, it didn't come as a huge surprise to me, because I don't know if I ever discussed this with you, Bob, but a couple of years ago, I assumed the Vegan Society was clearly vegan and didn't cheat on that, as it were. And I had actually done an article.
Don't tell me they're like a Mark Bittman kind of vegan then.
Well, I mean, it's sort of weird because I did an article for them. And then I did an interview. They interviewed in three issues. They interviewed Peter Singer in one issue, Tom Reagan in another issue, and then me in another issue. And so I'd done an interview. I'd done a couple articles for them. And I got an email from somebody one day saying, you know, why do you have anything to do with the Vegan Society when their magazine is promoting non-vegan restaurants? And I was shocked, and since I'm not a member of the Vegan Society, I didn't get the magazine, and you know, that when I wrote things, they would send me copies of what I wrote and whatnot, but I never saw the magazine. So I got in touch with the Vegan Society, and I said, could you please send me some magazines? And they did, and lo and behold, I look, and I see that they're advertising, they're taking paid advertisements for restaurants and bed and breakfasts and places like that are not vegan. And it's not that they're advertising these places as being vegan friendly. They're saying, you know, they're praising these places and putting all the fluff in the self promotional stuff that these restaurants are writing in their magazine. And there was one in particular, the Land Creek Guest House, which advertised itself as a haven of peace and tranquility or something, but it had a lot of cheese and eggs and things like that on the menu, and I was really shocked by this, and so I contacted them, and they said, well, you know, that's a good point, and you know, et cetera, and they had an online forum, so I went on the online forum, and I raised this, and I said, you know, this is terrible. Donald Watson would be spinning in his grave and whatnot, and they came back to me, and they said, well, actually, there were advertisements for vegetarian but not vegan restaurants or establishments in the early issues of The Vegan in the 1940s. And I said, well, yes, but that was after the Second World War, and Britain was still on food rationing and whatnot. And you know, it was 1944. It's now, you know, 2000 and at the time 12 or whatever it was. And, you know, really, we shouldn't be promoting restaurants that are serving cheese and eggs and things like that. And they banned me from the forum. They actually banned me from the forum for raising the issue of their taking paid advertisements in their magazine for non-vegan places.
But so were were they promoting their vegan menus, though, these places? I mean, were they trying to?
No. What they were saying is that these were vegan-friendly places. These were places, as a matter of fact, they had some advertisements in there, as I recall, for places that served meat, but that, you know, you know, had some vegan dish or whatnot. But see, I think the thing, look, I made the point to them that there's a distinction between providing a list of places that will provide vegan food for people who are traveling or something. I don't have an objection to that. The thing I was objecting to was taking paid advertisements from non-vegan places and having them promote themselves as animal, you know, animal place, you know, as animal friendly places, as it were, when in fact they're serving dairy and eggs and whatnot, and things which are, to me, morally indistinguishable from meat. Mm-hmm. And so I was very surprised at this. And I said to them, look, you know, again, I can understand if you want to give a list of places, but to take paid advertisements from these places is just a really bad idea. And, you know, and the Land Creek Guest House is not a haven of peace and tranquility for the cows whose babies are taken from them, from the chickens whose eggs are taken from them, from the animals who are exploited. It's not a haven of peace and tranquility, and the Vegan Society has no business promoting it as such. They banned me from their forum. So,
you know, we better shut up between now and March, or nobody will offend everyone. Nobody will come to our World Vegan Summit and Expo.
Absolutely wrong. People will come to the thing because people are disgusted. I have to tell you the rest of the story, and I'm now anxious that the break music, the music of death.
I know. Okay, let me see. Where are we? I would probably have a couple of minutes. Keep going.
Okay,
keep going.
Okay, great. Well, I have to tell you the rest of the story before we get to the break, and then we can analyze it afterwards.
Okay.
So, I went online and I posted something on the Facebook, on my Facebook site, which has now got, I guess, 56,000 people, and I posted something about how the Vegan Society has just articulated the idea, there, we've said it, you don't have to be vegan. And I was horrified by this, so I put it out there, and it got thousands and thousands and thousands of views. And a couple of days later, the Vegan Society, I only saw it today when I was getting ready to do the show with you tonight, and I wanted to just go back and check to see if anything had happened since I had seen this earlier in the week. I understand from somebody else that this actually changed a day or so ago, but they've now withdrawn that. They've taken that sentence off that you don't have to be vegan.
Oh,
so
good.
They respond.
A victory. A victory. Okay, we can get donations. We had a small victory, right? There's our, right? It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And it is easier than ever to go vegan. Just, you know, go answer your front door or answer the, you know, go to the door, you know, of your office and have vegan meals delivered from Greenlight Meals. Check out the menu at greenlightmeals.com. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, you name it, you know, snacks from jerky to trail mix to peanut butter cups and more. And the kids can have chickpea tenders with dipping sauce or mac and trees. Greenlight Meals even delivers delicious smoothies like blueberry lemon zest or carrot cake or strawberry shortcake. On and on the list goes, and gift certificates are available. And with the right gift plan for you, you can get weight loss and nutrition and fitness consultation from Melissa Bray. So again, the website is greenlightmeals.com. That's green, L-I-T-E, meals.com. And Professor Francione should not yell at me for taking paid advertising from one vegetarian house in San Jose because it's a 100% vegan restaurant, and wonderful it is, and vegan catering available in the Bay Area, first-rate catering for a business event, your wedding coming up. Contact Vegetarian House. It's vegetarianhouse.us. Vegetarian House was kind enough to donate $1,000 toward our goal to come up with a deposit for the venue for the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and I do believe by the end of this week, I will be making that deposit. So the 56,000 followers of Gary Francione start lining up at the Marina del Rey Marriott. You'll line up all the way back to Venice Beach, you know. But
Bob, I have to tell you, you made a comment before. You said, "Well, you know, we can't criticize." I mean, I know you were joking. Well, first of all, before I get to that. You would not take an advertisement for the assuming the Vegetarian House was not vegan, which it is. The Vegetarian House is vegan. But if the Vegetarian House were not vegan, I would assume you wouldn't be advertising them saying, this is a great place, a haven of peace and tranquility for animals, if they were not a vegan place, right? I mean, you just...
Correct, right.
Like Bob, the reason why you wouldn't do that is because you're a vegan and because you believe in veganism as the moral baseline. And so when you said before that, well, you know, we don't want to, you know, we won't have anybody coming to the conference, I disagree. I think there's a huge number of folks out there who are absolutely and positively disgusted with the large groups and are just repulsed by the whole happy exploitation movement that is pervading the entire animal movement. I mean, the animal movement now is the happy exploitation movement. The only other game in town is the grassroots movement that you and I and other people are supporting and that will be represented in this conference. I mean, it's so interesting to me. You know, your previous guest, the woman from Ireland, I don't believe I know her. What is her name again? I'm sorry.
Sandra Higgins.
Yes. She mentioned Karen Davis.
I don't know if you saw, I think you did, actually.
I did.
On my Facebook site, I had a very interesting exchange with Karen Davis, who, you know, who basically was very upset with me for suggesting that she was supporting welfare reform and that she wasn't an abolitionist. And she basically started arguing the welfarist position on my Facebook page. And claim, you know, and saying, look, we've got to do something for animals now, and making all of the same argument that all of the other welfarists, all of the other happy exploitation people make, in saying that, you know, we've got to do something now. And what Karen Davis and all of the rest of these people don't understand is you cannot promote welfare reform without promoting the moral normative message that it's morally okay to eat the animals that have been raised under the supposedly more humane standard. You can't basically say you can eat with, or you can be more compassionate if you make this change or that change, and then tell people it's wrong to consume the animals that are raised in accordance with that supposedly compassionate procedure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a complete perversion of language to say that, oh, well, yes, I support welfare reform, but I don't support happy exploitation. No, if you support welfare reform, you necessarily support animal exploitation. You are necessarily promote happy exploitation.
Where does the time go? I don't know. But
when you're having a good time.
I know. Okay. Well, we'll have to speak again next week, Professor Francio.
Thanks very much for listening.
Hey, check out Viva La Vegan Grocery, 8,000 vegan items, vivalaveganGrocery.com. Talk to you next week. Love animals, don't eat them. Go vegan.